Blog Talk Radio.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings. We decided long ago that the dangers of excessive and unwarranted concealment of pertinent facts far outweighed the dangers which are cited to justify it. Even today, there is little value in opposing the threat of a closed society by imitating its arbitrary restrictions. Even today, there is little value in ensuring the survival of our nation if our traditions do not survive with it. And there is very grave danger that an announced need for increased security will be seized upon by those anxious to expand its meaning to the very limits of official censorship and concealment. That I do not intend to permit to the extent that it's in my control.
We have before us the opportunity to forge for ourselves and for future generations a new world order, a world where the rule of law, not the law of the jungle, governs the conduct of nations. We have a real chance at this new world order, an order in which a credible United Nations can use its peacekeeping role to fulfill the promise and vision of the UN's founders.
George Bush has invoked a new world order without enunciating a new American purpose.
Bush kept said, and it's a phrase that I often use myself, that we needed a new world order, and instead it looks like we got a lot of disorder.
Today we take an essential step in defeating terrorism while protecting the constitutional rights of all Americans.
Preventing mass terror will be the responsibilities of presidents far into the future.
The Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, these are not simply words written into aging parchment. They are the foundation of liberty and justice in this country.
This is an ideological battle. Some people believe in globalism. Others of us believe in national sovereignty. It's a contest between ideologies, whether we believe in our institutions here, our national sovereignty, our constitution, or are we going to further move in the direction of international government? It's just knowledge is out there. If we look for it, you'll realize that our national sovereignty is under threat.
Renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
Dr. Martin Luther King, the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot to death in Memphis, Tennessee.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible?
He still has the gun. The gun is pointed at me right at this moment.
Take a hold of his thumb and break it if you have to.
We were running so fast. We had an explosion and we are defending immediately. Let's try our best.
People calling themselves members of the Weather Underground last night planted bombs in federal office buildings in Washington and Oakland, California.
They took the babies out of incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
Survivors of the USS Liberty are demanding a congressional investigation into what happened and acknowledgement that the Israeli Air Force bombed a U.S. intelligence Navy ship.
The death of bin Laden
marks the most significant achievement to date in our nation's effort to defeat al-Qaeda.
The Taliban is taking responsibility for shooting down a U.S. helicopter. More than 30 people were killed, and there are reports this morning that most of them are U.S. Navy SEALs.
There may be a false flag incident where a ship goes down and used to accelerate the next war.
If there's one thing that has unified Democrats and Republicans, and everybody in between, that we all hated the bank bailout.
The Department of Homeland Security is apparently on a huge ammo buying spree.
It comes out to like 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition.
Today, it is infinitely easier to kill a million people than to control a million people.
They estimated that they would have to eliminate 25 million people in these re-education centers. And when I say eliminate, I mean kill.
I'm here to warn people. You keep telling me to shut up. This isn't a game.
From the front lines of the...
If your killer instincts are not clean and strong, you will hesitate at the moment of truth. You will not kill. You will become dead Marines. And then you will be in a world of shit. Because Marines are not allowed to die without permission. Do you maggots understand?
Sir! Yes, sir!
Tonight... your kids will sleep with your rifle. You will give your rifle a girl's name. Because this is the only pussy you people are going to get. Your days of finger-banging old Mary Jane Rottencrotch through her pretty pink panties are over. You're married to this piece, this weapon of iron and wood. And you will be faithful.
How tall are you, Private?
Sir, 5'9", sir!
5'9"? I didn't know they stacked shit that high. You trying to squeeze an inch in on me somewhere, huh?
Sir, no, sir!
Bullshit, it looks to me like the best part of you ran down the crack of your mama's ass and ended up as a brown stain on the mattress. I think you've been cheated.
Where in hell are you from anyway, Private?
Sir, Texas, sir!
Holy dog shit, Texas, only steers and queers come from Texas, Private Cowboy. And you don't much look like a steer to me, so that kind of narrows it down. Do you suck dicks?
Sir, no, sir!
Are you a Peter Pepper?
Sir, no, sir!
I'll bet you're the kind of guy that would fuck a person in the ass and not even have the goddamn common courtesy to give him a reach around. I'll be watching you.
Do I ever feel like Sisyphus?
Yeah.
Of course I do. I've been waiting for people to start saying, like, oh, you put another picture of the sweat and of a squat rack. Really? But I don't know if they understand. I've been getting on that squat rack and grinding it out for 25 years. And I'm not bored with it yet. It might seem like that's an unwinnable battle. But really, to me, it's not about winning. It's the battle itself. It's the struggle. It's the daily test. That's what life's about. Not just physically, but mentally. Getting that rock to the top of the mountain. That's not what my goal is. My goal actually is pushing the rock. Because pushing the rock, that pushes me. That makes me tougher. That makes me harder, mentally and physically. It gives me much more than I give it. I want to struggle. I want to grind and claw and scratch, and I want to dig in and I want to push. And I don't want it to end. If I ever got the rock to the top of the mountain and it stayed there, I'd push it back down myself. I don't want to rest, and I don't want to coast, and I don't want to reach a point in my life where I say, that's it. I've done enough. I'm not going to give anymore. I'm not going to push anymore. No. No. That relentless cycle of day-to-day challenges, they aren't maddening to me. They don't frustrate me. They inspire me. Inspire me to drive and push more and to push harder. That's what that rock does to me. So I say, dig in and get to pushing.
All right, everybody. Joseph Gibson podcasting here, understanding the times in which we live today. My three different microphones here, trying to, now I'm on a phone. So, again, my audio problems here. It started last night, actually, and it's got to be my internet connection. They keep kicking me off. I don't know what the heck's going on here. But last night, of course, we did a late show, and we talked about actually some in-depth things, actually. And then, of course, we know last night I talked about the NSM platform there on how brutal they were to a friend of mine, Sarge. I don't know if Sarge will call in tonight. I don't have my call board open yet. I'm still doing my intro. But we talked about that. And, you know, I wish Sarge can hold his own. I mean, he don't give a damn. I mean, you know, but and of course, I got called out on that platform also. I was an operative, I guess. What operative as far as what? What am I operating? What am I operative-ing doing? I don't know. But it's hilarious, though. I mean, it makes for good podcasting in a way, but in the same time, though, you shouldn't mute people and kick them off. You know, I mean, you really shouldn't. I mean, if you're going to challenge them or attack them as an individual, give them a chance to respond back. I always do on my podcast. I would never do that to somebody, no matter what they're – unless they were, you know, yeah, well, actually – I have let them carry on before, even when they're threatening me. I mean, my life has been threatened several times on this show that they're going to get me and kill me and do this and do that. And, you know, we're still here. And, you know, I don't invite that. I'm not trying to entice people to do that. What I'm trying to say is that your threats don't mean anything. I have bigger fish to fry, bigger battles to fight. I mean, you're just a peon out there. But last night, though, I thought that was very disrespectful what had happened to him. The man is very intelligent, and it was just uncalled for. So, but anyway, tonight I'm going to play a little something on conspiracy theories. It's going to be about 29 minutes long. The audio is going to be perfect for you guys. So, and then I'll open up the phone lines, and we'll see 657-383-0616 if you have something you want to add, say. You come onto the platform and say whatever you want. Understanding the times in which we live today, that's what the objective is, and that's the name of this show and podcast. And we are worldwide. We're in over, 27 different countries, Morocco, South Africa, Germany, Australia, Canada. I mean, I put the map up there on my social media page. So your voice will get out there, and it is heard through the downloads. I mean, it's mainly played by the live show. I don't know how many I get for live listens, but I would say the downloads afterwards is where it happens. So, because then they insert the commercials in. I know Apple does. They put the commercials in. I looked at the one this morning, Geico. So, they put them in the beginning of the show. And Google there, if you go to Google, go to online radio with Joseph Gibson, you'll get the podcast there. And you'll hear the advertisements and whatnot. But, but this is live. So, what we're going to do is I'm going to start this off here. It's about 22, 23 minutes long, but it's a documentary, and it's about conspiracy theories and whatnot in the United States. And we got a lot of that going on. What's the truth out there? What is really happening? What is the truth? Do we even know anymore? I mean, can you believe the news media? I mean, surely Democrats, they don't know the freaking truth. Kamala Harris down there in El Paso, yeah, I'm down at the border. You know, I mean, she's one question she takes today. I mean, you know, this is just, but anyway, I'm going to play this real quick, and then we'll open up the platform.
It's not a birth certificate, Candy, and people are trying to figure out why isn't he giving his birth certificate. It's not a birth certificate.
What exactly happened on 9/11? How did they know who did this so quickly like they did Lee Harvey Oswald?
The official story of Sandy Hook has more holes in it than Swiss cheese.
Tonight we start with proof the deep state is real in America.
Conspiracy theories have taken center stage in American politics today.
But then we noticed a virus.
This is a planetary takeover plan. Fauci and Bill and Melinda Gates own the virus. They patented it 2 years ago.
Viral testing, so when you're tested, it gives them an opportunity to contaminate.
False flag events to then mandate mandatory vaccines.
You've heard three or four different concepts as to how it came out.
When the coronavirus pandemic hit America, frontline filmmaker Michael Kirk was already working on a film investigating the role of political conspiracy theories in our democracy.
There's been a kind of concerted effort, now that everything has moved from the fringe to the center, to knock down knowledge-based information. And all of a sudden, a large number of Americans simply do not believe what they're being told. And that's where we find ourselves now.
In this episode, Michael Kirk on how fringe conspiracy theories have become central to understanding the nation's response to the coronavirus outbreak. I'm Rainey Aronson, and this is the Frontline Dispatch.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the WGBH Catalyst Fund. Support for the Frontline Dispatch also comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center. Early detection is key to catching and treating many cancers. You can learn more about the innovative programs at massgeneral.org/cancer. Mass General Cancer Center. Every day amazing.
So, Mike, you know, you and I are so used to sitting across the table and just talking. And today we're talking remotely, which is, of course, a sign of the times. But thanks for joining me on the Dispatch.
It's absolutely my pleasure, Rainey.
Over the years, you and I have long talked, I mean, this is now going on almost a decade, talked about conspiracy theories, how they take hold, how they spread. And, you know, we've always wondered what the right timing was for a big film on conspiracy theories. So I want you to talk to us about why now.
Well, I think one of the things we've discovered, Rainey, in all the years of making these films about Washington and the White House and the presidency, is the extent to which to try to come up with a sort of unifying explanation of why what is happening in America's politics was happening, especially when we've experienced in the 2008-2009 time period the rise of the Tea Party in America. And we wondered, how does something like that get started? How does it grow? How does it influence our politics? And as you know from our earlier discussion of whether we should make this film or not, we came to the belief that the conspiracy theories are central to America's politics right now, for sure, and have been growing that way through the Obama administration and up to now. They've been with us forever, but they are central now to, I think, what's happening in our politics.
You're a director who loves to tell a story through people. So, Mike, who's been central in your character portraits?
Well, the way we're telling our story is through the rise of Alex Jones.
It is Monday, May 18th, the year is 2020, and this is the emergency transmission for the pro-human future. And we have a great responsibility here on the broadcast to really lay out the enemy plan. And I dare say, if you choose to accept this mission, you have an incredible responsibility because we have a real chance at stopping the New World Order.
His rise is the rise of conspiracy theory in American politics. You watch him starting back with 9/11 and moving to this moment now where he is literally gone from the fringe right into the Oval Office. Many people in the film call President Trump the conspirator-in-chief because he does have a conspiratorial mindset and has had it all of his career. But Jones and Trump are connected in 2015-2016 by Roger Stone, who becomes the sort of second major character in the film. And all of whatever they talk about in that incredible summer is amplified by Vladimir Putin and Russia, and it is all in the service of Donald Trump and Trump's presidency. We get the left in there pretty substantially after Trump is elected, but in these incredibly important years, it is through Jones that you can watch the growth, the power, the reach of the modern political conspiracy.
So Stone, Jones, and Trump. What is that moment? When is that? What happens? What goes down?
So Alex Jones was once upon a time a fringe late night access TV guy in Austin, Texas.
And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, I've been warning you about it for at least 5 years. All terrorism that we've looked at, from the World Trade Center to Oklahoma City to Waco, has been government actions. They need this as a pretext to bring you and your family martial law.
Hmm.
His fame is accentuated by the fact that he has figured out how to use the Internet to connect fringe people. Otherwise, you've always had conspiracists, and they were out there passing mimeographed letters back and forth. Once Jones figures out how to build a network from Facebook to Instagram to YouTube, all the ways that you can spread a conspiracy and connect people who believe in them, suddenly he's the guy, big, powerful force on the fringe. What he discovers is that he has to get more and more sort of outrageous, and the conspiracies have to get bigger and bigger. At this time, he's primarily an entertainer and a salesman of supplements, body armor for the coming Armageddon that will come because the world government is going to take over.
Forget everything you've been told about long-term food storage. When the collapse happens,
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body.
Talk about gold IRAs?
They've been available since 1986.
You really can lose weight while you're sleeping. Guaranteed.
Alex and his staff have used these Pure Soap products.
Hi, folks, this is Alex Jones, and I want to tell you about the Silver Lungs Generator. Now you can produce.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage
vaults? Control freaks adding poison to your water and laughing as you get sick and die? Start purifying your water with ProPure. My friends, I've done a lot of research, and the best.
But by 2012, he realizes that he's got to ramp it up more and more and more. Along comes Newtown.
With the latest on the deadly shooting at an elementary school in Newtown, Connecticut, the Sandy Hook School, and it is turning out to be worse than anyone could have imagined.
And he becomes famous for saying this is a false flag operation. There was actually not a shooting in Newtown, but a government-sponsored way to get your Second Amendment rights abrogated, take your guns. So that's his sort of claim to fame, and it's really outrageous. What he says. It gets him in a little bit of trouble, but it's trouble is his middle name by now, and he's making a tremendous amount of money, and his audience is huge, but it's on the fringe. He needs, if he wants to get into politics at all, he needs a politician who needs him and needs his audience. Roger Stone, an outrageous figure by his own account, I just interviewed Roger, he's a true character in American politics. And a powerful one.
And let me give you Roger Stone's bio, just so you know who he is in case you don't. Roger Stone's a veteran of non-Republican presidential campaigns, serving Richard Nixon, Ronald Reagan, Senator Bob Dole, to his subsequent regret, both George Bush, 41 and 43. Stone's a New York Times bestselling author, and Donald Trump called him a patriot and a tough cookie. Mr. Stone, thanks for coming on with us.
Alex, thanks once again for having me.
You bet. Where do you want to go first?
Let's talk about the media savagery of Donald J. Trump. I must tell you, not since I saw Richard Nixon...
You think of him, because of some of the things that he says and does, as maybe a really marginal kind of person, a little bit like you would have thought of Alex Jones. But actually, he's been there since the very, very beginning, and he has a very close personal relationship with Donald Trump in 2015. And he knows that Trump knows that in order to break out of the pack of all the establishment Republicans, he needs to activate fringe angry people who have probably not been in politics before. So by deciding to join up with Alex Jones, who needs political juice and cred to keep his audience going and is interested in American politics, he hasn't been that political other than fearing world government. He hasn't picked a candidate ever. So all of a sudden, Roger Stone appears on Alex Jones' program. They hit it off. They have a countless number of appearances. And finally, Jones secures what he wants, and Trump secures what he wants, which is an interview on the Alex Jones program.
Donald Trump is our guest, ladies and gentlemen, for the next 30 minutes or so. And obviously, he is a maverick. He's an original. He tells it like it is. Doesn't read off a teleprompter. Neither do I. He's self-made. this whole media operation that reaches 20 million people a week worldwide, conservatively, self-made. That's why I'm so excited. And he joins us from Trump Tower in New York City. He is the leading 2016 Republican presidential contender. Donald, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Alex. Great. Great to be with you.
And that moment is the moment that Alex Jones, A, falls in love, and B, Donald Trump knows that he's going to be able to start to activate all the people who have been with Alex Jones, and have not really been people who voted before.
1 minute left, Donald Trump. What do you have to say about what's coming up?
I just want to finish by saying your reputation's amazing. I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed, I hope.
Well, I'm impressed. I mean, you're saying you're fully committed. You know there's no future if we don't take this country back. Donald Trump, thank you so much, sir. You will be attacked for coming on, and we know you know that. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Now they're interested. They get interested by listening to Stone and Jones, and more importantly, they're listening to Trump. And Jones is very big on saying that he often says things to Stone on the show. And not very long after that, Trump tends to repeat them in arena performances during his campaign.
As we've been saying for 3 years, Hillary is the founder of ISIS along with Obama.
President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be crooked Hillary Clinton.
So suddenly Alex Jones, all the way from the fringes, has landed right at the heart of the United States presidential election. Enough so that some people we've talked to in the interviews have said you can attribute Trump's victory to that alliance between Jones, Stone, and Trump.
That is such an untold story in terms of our political history, especially the contemporary chapter of this history. So I was curious, Mike. I mean, obviously, these guys are sharing stories that are resonant. They're talking about things that people are worried about, anxious about. Can you tell me, what are they talking about? What kind of conspiracy theories are they spreading, and what's the content in those ideas?
Yeah, there's two fundamental things that are happening. So Stone has had a sort of second life as a conspiracist when he writes a book about the Kennedy assassination and says there's no way John F. Kennedy was shot by a single gunman in a Texas school book depository. He also has written lots of articles and a book about the Clintons and Bill Clinton's alleged rapes and Hillary's compliance with that. So the Kennedy assassination and the Clinton hatred and hatred of the Bush administration as well. This is a big anti-elite movement that he's bringing to the Jones show. And Jones, of course, spends his whole career very concerned about world government, internationalism, globalism, and the idea that big government, the Clintons, the Bushes, and others are just waiting for the right moments to institute something that will take guns away from people and get people locked up. And that runs the whole gamut from vaccines to almost all of it, including, and where Jones and Stone come together, health problems of Hillary Clinton. And when they raise in the summer of 2016 the conspiracy that Hillary Clinton is ill, that really wakes up on Facebook.
You know, she was in a hospital for almost a year. She had a bunch of brain surgeries, folks. They've kept her medical records secret. She looks like hell. But, I mean, what's really going on with Hillary? What's the inside intel, Roger?
Her health is not good. Bill's health is also not good. She's either had a small stroke or she has had some other disorder. She seems to be to have no stamina whatsoever.
And guess who is paying attention at that moment to that? That's Vladimir Putin and his Internet Research Agency in Moscow. And the way that that goes, according to lots of people we talked to, is the Russians are in the business to amplify the things that people like Jones and Stone talk about.
Right. So I was curious, before we get to coronavirus, the specific conspiracies around that, you're making a big documentary. You're sharing in part conspiracy theories. How do you walk that fine line of not amplifying this, but also trying to understand and get underneath this movement in a way that isn't just adding more of this into the universe of our media world?
You're right about that, Rainey. How do we walk the line between actually just talking about it and it, and making it somehow true? I think it's very clear from the very beginning what's at work here, what the nature of a conspiracy is, why people believe in conspiracies. We have two very good and experienced authors who have written about this in some detail. And, of course, we've talked to the people who have been victimized or impacted by the conspiracies themselves, especially around Newtown. It'll be pretty clear in watching the film what's going on here. And when you ask the fundamental question, which I've asked of the 30 or so people we've interviewed for the film, why do people believe this? And the answer is, we're all looking for answers that are proportional to the event. When we talk about the death of or the murder of John F. Kennedy, the reason so many conspiracy theories grow up around that, according to the experts we talked to, is because the proportions are wrong. One guy, all that havoc, the death of the president of the United States, oh my God, the entire change in America, one guy did that? No way. That's the CIA. That's the Russian. That's a massive conspiracy, right?
Right.
So the same becomes true for almost everything that comes down the line. How can you explain coronavirus, or how can you explain almost any of the issues that come forward without without saying it cannot possibly be? It has to be bigger than that. You mean you're telling me that this thing that's destroying the world is the result of one little act somewhere? No, no, it's got to be bigger than that. It's got to have an intention to it.
Right.
And what people like Alex Jones, Roger Stone, and Donald Trump, and conspiracists on the left are able to do is they're able to connect the dots for people with what feels like a coherent answer to a problem that makes them feel powerless if they don't have some kind of an answer.
I'll be back to talk more to Michael Kirk right after this quick message. The journalism behind the Frontline Dispatch is possible thanks to the support of you, our listeners. And we've got some really great news to share. Our friends at the Ruggles Family Foundation have agreed to match your gift to the Dispatch, dollar for dollar, up to $10,000. Please help us take full advantage of this generosity and assist us in reaching our goal today. Remember, every dollar you give is doubled. So join us in supporting journalism that holds our leaders and government to account and pursues the truth wherever it may lead us by making a gift today. Thank you so much.
Support for the Frontline Dispatch comes from Mass General Cancer Center. When facing the unknown, it is often the small acts of courage that we experience in our daily lives that power us to face another day. We're all in this together.
So, Mike, I want to shift to the coronavirus itself. And so you're producing this film well before. And, you know, I can remember vividly before we all had to leave the offices, our conversations around this film and how urgent it felt at the time. Then coronavirus hits. What's going through your mind? Were you looking to see when would conspiracy theories start to bubble up? And what did you see?
Well, there was really no doubt. We were shooting in New York a series of interviews we had shot, and it was basically the week of March 12th. So we're in New York, we're shooting interviews about conspiracies, about all the things you and I have just been talking about, and with experts and people who do it and all kinds of things like that. And we keep hearing news reports. And we keep hearing about this rising crisis and that it's coming. And we've been talking about it before, but we're in New York now and we start hearing there's going to be a lockdown. In other words,
right,
very early, a coronavirus conspiracy is uttered in our presence, and people say, and people were starting to come to do interviews with gloves on and, you know, sanitizers with them. And they were looking at us. These are people who are in the middle of the conspiracy world, and they were saying, the Chinese have released a bioweapon in the United States of America. It's going to take over New York, and it's going to shut New York down. you guys better get out of town. And we said, well, the better part of valor is for us to get out of here. We rented a car, wiped it down, and drove back in the middle of the night and started to invent a new way to shoot so that we could finish the film and certainly began to research what's going on with the coronavirus conspiracies.
So, I mean, it's interesting that they came in with the conspiracy theory that this was being spread by China, and there was a conspiratorial aspect to that. But the idea that New York would shut down, if they start to spread that idea and then New York shuts down, what happens to people listening to those conspiracy theories? Do they believe it more? I mean, this is what I'm trying to get underneath. Like, so does that mean then people start to think, well, they were right?
Yes. I mean, the beauty of big, powerful conspiracy theories is that they often seem to be right. We all remember Watergate. You know, we all remember information about WMD. Mm. We all remember that those were conspiracy theories. At one moment, people were saying, wait a minute, the Bush administration doesn't have any proof for this. And a lot of people, progressives, said, yeah, that's right. But it was viewed as a really crazy thing to assert at the moment. So enough things happen that come from conspiracy theories that people do believe them, especially a certain cohort. And in this case, you had a large group of Americans who already are used to having stars like Jerome Corsi, who was in the film, Alex Jones, and others who they know. These people are the sort of rock stars of conspiracies, and they know and trust them. And when they start to say, especially in the very beginning, This is not a virus that's going to come. This is a media hoax. And it's a desire to blame President Trump. A lot of people who were his supporters and in his base really, of course, believe that, especially when Fox is heralding it. And it's a desire to shift the blame to Trump is what they all said. And a lot of people believe that when the virus itself started to show up and people started to die and broke out in Seattle and was on its way to New York, that's when the message that coronavirus was intentionally spread by Chinese operatives got going. A lot of people needing an explanation for what was happening began to believe that.
Right. So is that the top conspiracy theory? Is that the one that's gotten the most traction?
No, tell me,
what's the one that's gotten the most traction?
It gets better than that. So early you have the left and the media hoax to blame Trump. Then it's coronavirus is intentionally spread by Chinese operatives. That makes a comeback a little later, but at the time that was everything. Then, right around that time, another group of people, the anti-vaxxers, were very big on the idea that the virus is being acted on because of as a result of population control efforts by Bill Gates, and Bill Gates becomes the new George Soros of this particular issue. The idea that that the Gates Foundation wants to get into vaccines, but it also wants to plant devices in people, microchips. That becomes a huge part of, wait a minute, we don't want anything from that. Then, of course, that morphs into the deep state plot to eliminate freedom, which is a lot of what you're seeing now.
Take a look behind me here. They are still lining the streets. They are still blaring the horns, many with signs saying that essentially liberty and the governor's executive order have little to do with each other.
A lot of frustration out here on the streets. They wanted gridlock, and they are getting it.
Hundreds rallied outside the state capitol against the governor's stay-at-home orders.
They've called the shots. The president is now encouraging some states to, quote, liberate.
In Virginia, with respect to the Second Amendment, is just a horrible thing. They did a horrible thing, the governor.
It's this idea that the governors, not the president, but the governors are shutting down your constitutional opportunity to be free of movement, to be happy, to work. And that's really what you're feeling now. You're feeling people who are angry, who are being told their guns are going to be taken away. They have to stay home. They don't have freedom of movement. So it's all become a civil rights argument now and a gun rights argument.
Right.
And when people are hearing that their freedom is truly under threat and that they should prepare to fight, That's a combustible mix, Rady, from what I can tell.
I was not surprised but alarmed at how the movie Plandemic that was on YouTube and then taken off and then spread around the universe, how quickly that took hold. Can you just talk briefly about that?
People are hungry to know something, to have it explained, to have the inexplicable explained to them in a coherent way.
Mm.
And even if everything about it is debunked, is seriously ridiculous, is outrageously wrong, if it makes a kind of sense to them, and especially if elites and knowledge-based institutions, and sadly people like Tony Fauci, say this isn't true, this can't be true, that in a way blesses it.
A slew of COVID-19 misinformation has been going viral on social media. One video making the rounds,
so-called Plandemic conspiracy theory, now floating about, which alleges that coronavirus was engineered to increase vaccinations.
The Plandemic video went viral on a wide range of platforms, including Facebook.
An internet video known as Plandemic. It makes some very controversial claims about the COVID-19 pandemic, leading critics to call it simply a mashup of conspiracy theories put together in one video.
This is the bind journalism is in. This is the bind universities are in. This is the bind experts like Fauci and Redfield are in. How do you convince people who just simply don't believe it and for years have been conditioned not to believe experts? So when a pandemic like coronavirus hits, people expect a big reason why it's happening, a huge reason what's going on, a way that it can be explained. And if somebody can put together a 10 or 12 or 20 minute video and have a story that involves all of the other elements that always exist, big government, elites, the rejection by powerful people, an effort to keep information away from the little guy in a way that really feels, that's what they're doing, all right. Should they shut that down, knowing that it's wrong, it's, you know, nonsense? Should they shut it down just because of that? Well, who's playing God here? And I think it's a legitimate argument in a democracy. What do you do about that?
For years now, you've covered politics, our economy, national security. I'm just curious, how do you weigh this moment, especially regarding truth and the infodemic that you described? How do you weigh this up against the other threats that you've covered before?
This is the coming together of all of the things we've reported for decades now. This is, take them all, take WMD, take torture, take a war in Iraq, take 9/11, go back to things that happened during the Clinton-Bush administration, the first Gulf War. Take all of it, and put it in the social upheaval in the society. The financial collapse in 2008, just list them, boom, 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 all the things we've reported on for all these decades. This feels to me and the team I'm working with as the big moment. This is where it all comes together. And conspiracies are at the heart of it, of course, because they've all grown out of all those other events. It really is the fundamental moment, from my point of view, for everybody, the people who are living through it especially, but those of us who are trying to tell the story and sort out what is truth, what is a fact you can believe in. In these times, it is an extremely important and, I think, daunting task.
Thanks for talking. It's always one of my biggest pleasures. And I can't thank you enough for coming on The Dispatch with us and helping us understand some of these really big issues.
Well, I thank you, Rainey. It's always great to talk to you and especially to work with you on these important things.
Thanks, Mike.
You can read more stories from Frontline's coverage of the coronavirus pandemic at frontline.org. This podcast was produced by Max Green and James Edwards. Our production assistant is Lucy Sullivan. Production help in this episode from Brooke Nelson. Catherine Gleibert is our editorial coordinator.
All right, all right, shut up.
Pam Johnson is Frontline Senior Director of Strategy and Audience.
All right, big conspiracy theory. Understanding the times in which we live today.
President number one, if you want to talk, if not, let's see, I had a couple of callers here that were lined up here for a little bit. Conspiracy theories, I mean, how much of a problem are they? I mean, is this really a huge problem in today's society? I mean, because I'm going to tell you something. I know some of the Democrats that get bad names, everyone gives the entire party the cuckoo effect there, that they're all nuts. But there's actually some Democrats out there, but there's many Democrats, but that actually are against some of the policies that some of the other ones are for. Now, we all know, you know, the main one there, Joe Biden, he's a sleepy. I mean, how about that weird interview there, you know, whispering and everything? That guy is, I think the 25th is coming his way. I mean, they're going to be declaring that on him real soon. I just don't see how this guy can last. Imagine if he lasted the whole entire two terms. How could that be? I mean, I would just, anybody want to place like some bets on that? Like how long, that's a good thing. Start a pool. How long before he gets removed from office? You know, I don't know. It's just, again, I opened up the podcast here tonight with, I don't know if Sarge is out there or not. I think I see him in the chat room. Sarge, do you want to join in tonight? I got three private callers. I scanned to they're playing noises in the background, so I can assure you they're that's not Sarge. Bolshevism carries a sickle, hammer and a sickle. Death carries a sickle. Fauci and I'm reading the dope. I'm reading the chat room right here. I don't think that Donald Trump is a Democrat. I think that he is a. I think he was really for the Republic. I think it's, and people have to understand the Republic. It's for the people to decide. It's for the people to take back. It's not up to the government to save you. The people. If it's the people's government, then the people need to rise up and take it back. And the lawful means and ways to take it back is there for you. It's available. The law is available. The problem is that we have less than 3% like the founders had, and people are just totally lost. As far as the building collapse there, I haven't heard any conspiracy theories on that. The one there in down in Florida, the building collapsed that yesterday about, what was it, about 11:50 in the morning it collapsed? Did anybody hear that nobody blew it up or anything like that? I mean, no conspiracy theories going around there. So let me generate some talking points here if I can. Let me check the boards here, see if anybody wants back up to the boards. And the phone number is 657-383-0616. We're doing a late show. I did one last night, too. I'm going to go back to my regular time. And pull up these stories here and see what's going on. And, hey, look, all I can tell you is this. If we don't speak up and say something and we don't make our voices heard and we don't start getting involved in some sort of action out there, some sort of street action and not just protesting, getting involved within our climate, within the political community, whether or not you agree with it or not, whether or not we start making some change together, the meetings are fine, meeting, doing this, talk, and getting along is what's important. But at the same time, if just all we're doing is talking and meeting, nothing is going to be achieved. And we don't have to worry about what China and Russia is doing. What we need to do is get rid of Chinese products. Don't buy anything from China as best you can. Let's see, Kamala Harris arrives at border immediately, hounded by reporters. I've already talked about that one. Lockdown architect caught red-handed violating lockdown to have affair with mistress. Oh, boy. Smoking gun, proof that COVID pandemic is a scam. That's three dead, three injured after attack by a knifeman in Wurzburg, Germany. Those knives, got to ban those knives, you know. I mean, they're just dangerous. We need to start having, everyone needs a permit when they want to use a knife to cut their food up at night. No. Warning, America. General Flynn says globalists will pull something big before Arizona audit goes public. Rapper Busta Rhymes goes on epic masked rant during live performance. Everybody saw that. Smoking gun. I already read that one. Miami building collapse. Harris finally decides to visit border. Scientist recovers deleted COVID genetic data. Let's go on. Let's open up that one. Let's see here. They won't pull that one up. That was a good one, too. All right. Yeah, I see your message. That's all right. CNN's Van Jones verdict, was it the, oh, the verdict for the Iran case there. Let's see what he has to say here. CNN is just, you know, I've watched CNN reporters get, I've watched them come from Fox to CNN and from CNN to Fox. So they're just getting paid. They're just, they're actors. They're not really, you know, believing what they say. But anyway, this CNN commentator, Van Jones told viewers that 22.5-year sentence handed down to former police officer Derek Chauvin for the death of George Floyd was not good enough. Reacting to the Minnesota judge's decision on Friday, CNN legal analyst Ellie Hunnick said, "I think this is light. I think the judge should have sentenced him more." Van Jones responded saying, "Very disappointing. 15 years. I know people doing 15 years for nothing, for victimless crimes of drug possession. What this man did should have been the maximum of the maximum." What does that mean, maximum of the maximum? What does that mean? That's what I would ask right away. What's that mean? "I don't think it's going to cause outrage," he admitted, "but it's a punch in the gut. This guy's life was worth more than 15 years. It was, and what that officer did is worth more than 15 years, and law enforcement across the country should look at something like this and say, look, you can't do this type of stuff. You're never going to come back home." After Hunting noted the federal government still has two indictments against Chauvin pending, Jones suggested they should lack a more time to sentence. The feds can come in and do more, and they should do more, because this is not justice, Jones said. Joe Biden deferred from Jones, saying Chauvin's sentencing seems to be appropriate. So, that's Biden said that? Why aren't they marching in front of the White House? The maximum possible sentence for Chauvin was 40 years. For those wondering if the feds indicting Chauvin on the top of the state charges would be an example of double jeopardy, it turns out that under the dual sovereignty doctrine, state and the federal government are permitted to charge a person for the same crime, as long as the crime violated both state and federal laws. With people like Van Jones telling Americans the judge's ruling wasn't good enough, and we expect to see more George Floyd's riots in the next few days. Probably. Who knows? Pence says he's proud of what he did January 6th. There we go. I need to read that one, actually. Let's see. All right. Trump, VP Mike Pence said he was proud of his actions on January 6th in a speech that was heavily downvoted on YouTube. Pence also said he had never felt better in his life, although his political career is effectively over. What's he care? He's a multimillionaire. He's got every freaking contractor in his pocket. He's got ties. What's he care? He doesn't care. He's rich for the rest of his life. He doesn't have to worry about that. He's got Secret Service protection. He doesn't care. I can't stand when people write stuff like that. Like, his political career is over. Oh, what's he going to do? The guy's old. He's going to go retire. He's going to go get his human trafficking ring, his sex trafficking ring, his prostitutes that they kidnap from down at the border down there that are coming over. And then they're going to have their sex rings at their Bohemian Grove. That's what they're going to do. January 6th was a dark day in the history of the United States Capitol. I don't know. I don't think it was a dark day. He said at the Reagan Library, but thanks to the swift action of Capitol Police and law enforcement, the violence was quelled. Where the hell was this guy looking at? What's he watching? What's he? He must have been eating the same food as Biden, huh? I mean, what's he talking about? Thanks to Capitol Police. All 30 of them? Come on, man. This is a conspiracy theory, this stuff right here. The Capitol secured was reconvened Congress the very same day to finish the work of counting an electoral vote from every state in the union. I don't think so. The video had over five downvotes to every upvote on YouTube. As of the time of the writing, "Go away, Pence. Middle America rejects you," said one commenter. Several other commenters said Pence had no future in politics. Again, he doesn't care. He might feel good, but he's more delusional than Joe Biden if he thinks he has a chance at being president, another added. Those are probably bots writing that stuff, NSA computers. Let's see here. All right, let me check the boards here, go over here. Those are two stories I wanted to read. 657-383-0616. Let's see here. Let's go over to this board here. All right, first private caller. Go ahead. You're on.
Hey, Joe, thanks for your ringing defense of me at the beginning of the show. But
Sarge. Sarge, I got a little bit. It sounds like I got an echo. Let me know right away because I've got three. I had three headsets working here, and then I'm on a phone now because something's going on with Blog Talk Radio, man. I don't know what it is, but do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound perfectly normal. I don't hear an echo at all.
All right. Okay, Sarge. Well, I opened up the show with your name tonight. So, you want to talk about it, or you just want to let it go, or what's up?
Not over much. I always find it curious when I live rent-free in people's heads. I mean, I'm nothing more than a retired police officer, a retired soldier. I got an opinion like a lot of other people do. And it really always just fascinates me when people are so concerned with what I have to say that, you know, I just literally live rent-free in their head, and I don't like the furnishings there. I don't know why they want me to live there. You know, but I must be fairly effective if they're so obsessed with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't see last night's show, Eddie called in after the show, and actually, it wasn't his show, but he called in. I forgot what he had said, but he didn't have anything derogatory to say about you or negative. He tells it like it is. He's pretty honest. It may make for good podcasting, but singling somebody out and then that defamation of character, slandering them like that could put a jacket on somebody on the podcasting platform, and I don't think that's the correct thing to do. I think that caller should have been stopped maybe and said, hey, you know, because, hey, look, if it was me calling in, I would have got stopped. You know, I mean, you got stopped. I mean, so they're, you know, are muted. So there. Well, actually, the big thing was you said sweetheart. I think that's what it was that got you muted, right? You said sweetheart.
I
said what were you supposed
to say? I don't remember saying it. Maybe I did, but I don't think I did. Did I?
I don't know. That's what that was. What was said?
They
I don't
said
know.
I
didn't hear it.
I don't believe I did it. I certainly wouldn't call her a sweetheart. I mean, good Lord. But look, I don't have any complaints about when I call in there. I get treated pretty fairly. They let me say my piece. Nobody particularly excoriates me. All I would have liked to have a chance to respond to that woman when she accused me of putting out erroneous information and all that. I mean, you know, I think I can source everything I say. And if what I say is not correct, it ain't my fault. I'm just citing it. I even give the sources. You know what I mean?
I'll tell you what.
All
I'm watching some of the comments in the chat room, Sarge. Hang on, Sarge. I'm watching some of the comments in the chat room. And let me say, look, this. Sarge, I'd rather be standing with him in a foxhole than some of these white people out there. Surely everybody's going to – I mean, the guy is a soldier, and he speaks his mind. That's what you want. The bottom line is this. If you don't want to live with certain groups of people, that's fine. But the thing of it is that these are the – I mean, whatever you think of him, the guy is not a bad dude. I mean, what the hell, man? I compared to what the hell's out there right now with a lot of the whites, Antifa, and a lot of the people in the black community, too. And Sarge is the first one to say that. So, I mean, I don't know why someone would denigrate somebody or ridicule somebody that's of your character, Sarge. I just don't understand that. I mean, you speak your mind, like you said, and – I mean, I don't know. I just don't understand. I don't get it. I mean, why pick a fight with somebody that's as good of character as yourself?
Well, you know, I appreciate you saying that. I'd like to think that I am. But like I said, I'm just a guy who's got an opinion like anybody else. I ain't no operative. I mean, if I was an operative, I sure as hell need to be paid for it, and I ain't getting a dime. I mean, I'm really objecting to the fact that people out there think I'm an operative, and I'm not even getting paid, and they got to think I'm an operative. This is irritating. You know, so, but still.
I know.
You know, that's fine. You know, like I said, I'm living rent-free in some people's heads. I ain't paying no money for it, so that's okay. And like I said, you know, when I call in there to NSM, I'm surprised they even let me on. And I get to make my say. I ain't got no real beef or nothing. I mean, that woman's entitled to her opinion, no matter how wrong she might be. But I really would have appreciated if she told me where I was wrong and what was the nature of the erroneous information she claims I was putting out.
Well, I know.
I mean,
well, she also called me an operative.
She even say that I said that Tuskegee Airmen had higher intelligence than white fighter pilots. I didn't say that. I said that when the Army tested the 99th Pursuit Squadron because they were determined whether or not they were going to keep them in being, when they gave them tests for competency on the technical subjects and the tactical subjects and all of that. That includes the ground crew, the administrative staff, and the pilots. They scored higher than the average white fighter squadron. That's all. I didn't say they had more intelligence. A lot of times people are more competent in the same job than people with higher intelligences. They just work harder, and they're better. It's not because they're more intelligent.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and then
people
made a comment about
not
the open
listen
phone.
To what you say. They just want to put in what you say, you know, all that sort of stuff, and fine. And I'll acknowledge the fact that they were cherry-picked. They were the best of the best they could pick for the job, and they had to if they were going to let them stay in existence. They were looking for an excuse to get rid of them. That's another reason that might account for why they were better than the average, note I said average, white fighter squadron. And even then, they still had their teething troubles. Like most new to combat fighter squadrons, they had troubles. They made mistakes, just like the 4th fighter group, the 56th fighter group under Blakeslee, the highest scoring fighter group in Europe. They made a bunch of mistakes and had to get whipped into shape too. That happens with many, if not most, units. But by the end of it, though, they had wound up to be a better than average fighter group. You know, like most of these things do.
Well, I brought it up on open phones about the Jesuits and whatnot, and I was given quotes about Mein Kampf. And, you know, and Bert and I actually disagreed on the platform, but we did it professionally. You know, we didn't start calling each other names. You know, I mean, I thought that's, I think that's the type of podcasting, I mean, that really brings the people to an educated conversation where you can have a disagreement but and start talking about things and, you know, citing your sources and whatnot. And, like, for instance, on their website there, the first American slave owner was the, what was his name? Now I can't even think of his name. I'm the one that wrote it, actually. What was his name again? Anthony Johnson? Was that it?
Yeah, he was the legally certified slave owner by court action in the American colony.
And that's what I said in the comment, and then somebody right away, you don't know what you're talking about, Native Americans were the first slaves. Well, I didn't say who was the first slaves on the continent. I said first American slaves, you know. And this is how things get distorted and twisted. But I brought it up about the Jesuits, you know, and, you know, Hitler, obviously, you know, when you start talking about that, obviously if I would think, I'm not trying to put anybody down here or criticize him, but if I was to be a member of the NSM or I was a Nazi, I would make sure I was very well versed in the history of Hitler and I understood everything of Mein Kampf. I'd make sure I would memorize that book word for word. And this way here, and especially if I'm on a podcast show, I would immediately, you know, be able to defend anything that would attack him, because obviously you're going to get attacked if you're standing up for something as controversial as Adolf Hitler in America, because that's what he's portrayed as, the controversial and whatnot by the media. I mean, that would be, you know, I mean, that would just, but I'm not trying to put anybody down, but he was honest. He said, I'm not too educated on that subject, but it's true. He did not like these Jesuits. He couldn't stand them. And in May of 1941, to cast them out of the military right before the, you know, the invasion there, I mean, that's stupid. You know, why not use them? You know,
Joe,
I mean, you know.
Well, Joe, you got to remember, the Nazi Party had a schism between its right and its left wing. That's why Hitler instituted the Night of the Long Knives, where he literally decapitated the Sturmabteilung, the SA, the head of the SA. He took the whole leadership out. Gregory and Otto Strasser, Gregor was assassinated, and Otto had to flee the country because there was literally a schism between the right and the left wing. The left wing of the Nazi Party wanted a genuine social revolution. They wanted the SA to take over the army's role or absolutely control it, and they wanted the country to become not just in league with the industrialists and the aristocrats and the bankers and the church. They wanted almost like a Bolshevik revolution in Germany, and Hitler wasn't going for that. He was on the right wing of the Nazi Party, along with the rest of the Nazi leadership, and the others were on the left wing, and there had to be a fight about it, and that's why they got purged. That's why he purged his own party. So even the Nazis had a falling out about the direction of the Nazi party.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the mistakes by Hitler are far too numerous to list, but, you know, I mean, we can go on and play Monday morning quarterback. I mean, the guy, obviously, you know, I mean, I wasn't around back then. I don't know. I can only go by what the history books write, and we always know that the winner usually writes the history. And, you know, I mean, but the fact, then again, we've had a lot of live testimony that, for instance, remember when I talked about how the what did I bring up a few? Remember you disagreed with me on it? Remember I said something about military records?
We talked about Hitler's war record, and I said that whatever you want to say about Adolf Hitler, you know, however you want to condemn him, yeah, he was an odd duck according to most of his comrades and all that, but his war record appears to be very valorous and commendable. I'm talking about his First World War record. And, you know, a lot of people want to even take that away from him, but I don't think you can take it away from him and examine it in totality. The man literally survived just about 4 years on the Western Front, much of it in the trenches.
Yeah.
And he got the Iron Cross first class as enlistment, a Gefreiter. He wasn't even an Obergefreiter. He was a lance corporal.
Well, you know,
that was a rare award for an enlisted man of that rank.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing he did was wise. He deliberately kept his private life from the German public, you know, as a way to ensure his popularity, maybe, but also because, you know, look, when you're in that type of position or power, what are you going to do? You know, you have to be careful when with the propaganda out there. You know, I mean, that people slander you and whatnot. So he was wise to do that. You know, but what did the U.S. intelligence know about Adolf Hitler in 1943, you know, and stuff like that? If you read some of these newly released documents and whatnot that are becoming unclassified, and it's actually pretty, because I'm studying a lot of this stuff now and I'm looking into it, and it's very fascinating. A lot of the things that that happened during that era that shaped the world. And I believe the world probably would have been a better place if he would have defeated Russia. That's for damn sure. You know, because Stalin was a son of a bitch. He was a maggot, you know.
He was afraid. Look, he knew that Germany needed economic wherewithal to conduct a long war. And he thought that he could. He didn't have the strength and the resources to both go into the breadbasket of Ukraine and change the thrust of Army Group Center to take Moscow. He took a couple Panzer groups off from the Army Group Center, sent them south to assist Rundstedt in taking the breadbasket of the Ukraine. And meanwhile, the attenuated units were still trying to do these great big encirclement battles in Vyazma and Minsk and Smolensk, and they just didn't have the resources to do that and continue to drive to Moscow. And that's where they got, plus they got 4 weeks, they got off to a 4 week late start because they had to bail out Mussolini in the Balkans and in Greece. So they got caught by the winter and the more importantly, the mud. The mud slowed down, the autumn rains really slowed their movement down because the roads in Russia are SHIT. I mean, they're just primitive. And they didn't have metal roads for the most part, and their trucks and their tanks got stuck down in the mud. And the whole thrust of the offensive was slowed down. And by the time they got it restarted, they had gotten the information from their spy ring in Japan that the Japanese were not going to intervene in the east on the German side, so they were able to free up the Siberian divisions of winter-hardened, winter-toughened ski troops, for the most part, and send them to fight in Moscow in the cold, on the Moscow front in cold. And that was what turned the tide for the Russians and Stalin.
Yeah. Yeah, Hitler had a pact with Stalin, but, you know, I don't know what the chat room there, I don't know what the point of it is, what he's trying to get at.
The point of it was,
you know,
it was
you both need to enroll in my course in Switzerland.
Yeah, well, the point of it was to free up his eastern flank so he could move against Poland without having to worry about Russia coming in on. They divided up Poland between them, up to the River Bug, The Russians took the River Bug back east of Poland. The Germans took it to the west. They had a deal. I mean, you could see the newsreels of their officers meeting, shaking hands, showing each other the agreements they made with each other. And, you know, and then the Russians proceeded to, you know, wipe out the Polish intelligentsia in their sector. They did the massacre in the Katyn Forest, 50,000 Poles, officers, clerics, educators, politicians.
What can we use today? What can we use to use, though, to learn from the mistakes of Hitler or World War II to learn and better ourselves today, or learn as just a general? You know, and that's the thing of learning. See, people don't, they don't read history and they don't learn from it. And we have to learn from history because, you know, if we keep repeating it and repeating it, that's really insane. And that's what we do. We keep repeating history. Why not learn from it and try to not repeat the – because everyone wants to replay it again and say, yeah, we're going to do it again. You know, we're gonna do it again. We're going to do the same thing. That's just inconceivable. You know, and they do the same thing with the founding fathers, actually. You know, there's no way we can repeat what George Washington did. It's impossible.
Well, it's kind of odd in a way, though, when you stop to think that, you know, Hitler had kind of a Napoleonic dream. Well, we had Lebensraum in the east. That's what he wanted, to colonize the eastern part of Europe, particularly up to the Urals, you know, European Russia up to the Urals. But oddly enough, the European Union is at least a ghost echo of what Hitler wanted to accomplish, at least in Western Europe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, when we talk about
accident,
this.
Well, let me take that back. Let me take it by accident, because actually he was trying to get a rapprochement with France and England because, you know, he said, look, British Empire, you can have your empire. Just leave me alone on the continent so I can have Russia. France was always the traditional enemy. But, you know, the circumstances of the war and the fact that, you know, the Allies dug in their heels after Munich, and particularly when Adolf Hitler moved in and took over the rest of Czechoslovakia after he got the Sudetenland by agreement with Britain and France, that kind of sealed that deal, that France and Britain were going to be against Germany.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I know Churchill, he wouldn't back off anyway. But when Hitler wanted peace, he was like, hell no, you know. But then, you know, I mean, it's just, you got to learn from it. But at the same time, like I said, the problems that we face today, I don't think here in America that the problems Germany was facing is a reflection of what we're facing today. What do you think? I'm just throwing that out there as a question.
Oh, of course, you know, I mean, like the Cold War might be over and the Soviet Union might be discombobulated, but the Russian Federation is still there, and Putin, he wants to recreate the Russian Empire of the Tsars.
Yeah.
That's really what he wants to do.
Well, anyone
so
Russia is
still looking at expansionism. I mean, it may not be able to get the Baltic states again right now like Stalin did. A lot of people kind of miss out on the Winter War between the Finns and the Russians. They were really fighting over the Karelian Isthmus between the two countries, and that was huge because Britain almost declared war on the Soviet Union when the Soviet Union invaded that part of Finland, and the Finns really gave the Soviets an ass whooping until they finally managed to steamroll them and overwhelm them, and that's why Hitler said, "Oh, these Reds, my armies are gonna just defeat them." In a heartbeat, because all I got to do is kick in the door, and the whole rotten structure will come collapsing down. And he based it upon the horridly bad performance of the Red Army against Finland.
Yeah, and actually, who was the general there that told him in the bunker meeting there that said, "Hey, you know, you're mistaken, man. That the Stalin's army is very well equipped and very well trained, and they are." They're coming at, you know, they're moving at a faster pace than what we thought, and they are overrunning us. They can't fight because Hitler wanted to defend Frankfurt, right? The fort there. He wanted to defend the fort, and they wanted 150,000 troops taken away from there and brought up to the front line. And Hitler wanted to use the reserves. Am I correct?
Well, I think you're talking about later in the war, aren't you? Like after the war was pretty much
right
a
here.
Done
deal.
Yeah,
about
60
days before the end. Yeah, about 60, 70
days
before the end.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Germany was finished by that stage of war. Germany was finished. She was how long was it going to be before it completely collapsed? I'm talking about like before even Operation Barbarossa started. You got to remember the Red Army had purged itself in the worst peacetime purge any army's ever undergone. They think Stalin might have executed as many as 50,000 of his own soldiers of the Red Army, to include all of the top-ranking brigade, division, and army group commanders. Well, not all of them, but many of them, if not most of them, including the marshal of the Soviet Union, a guy named Tukhachevsky, who was very innovative, very intelligent, very charismatic. He was really innovative with tactics, like he was looking at airborne operations and armored, combined arms operations, the kind of thing the Germans were doing. He was looking all around the world to getting ideas. He was very far-thinking, and Stalin looked upon him as a rival, somebody who might upset him and take power from him because he was so charismatic and respected. That was one of the reasons they framed him up on charges of conspiracy and treason to overthrow Stalin, and they tortured him to death along with a bunch of other people in the staff. And by the time the Germans invaded the Soviet Union, the Russian army had literally inflicted horrible wounds upon itself, because then they had appointed politically reliable political generals who weren't worth a damn. And the frontier armies of the Soviet Union got chopped to pieces in the greatest military defeats anybody's ever seen in the history of warfare.
Well, I think Karl Marx, he really needs to be exposed. This way of, you know, needs to be exposed and talked about. I'm trying to put together a documentary where I could play on here, because you know what? These dumbasses out there need to learn what monster and scumbag and his ideologies that need to be exposed and talked about. And this way here we can, because people, I don't think, understand, you know, this ideology, how dangerous it is, and how it's the precedent of it today is shaping the minds of people through the narrative of our television and music and whatnot and the media and the Hollywood and everything else. And we've got to stop it. We've got to use the information war to our benefit, not against it. We can't use it to defeat us. And what we're trying to do here, whether or not what side we want to take as far as the issues that we're battling against here in America, we got to look at this as a global fight, because they're trying to achieve a global government. We can't look at it from a my own backyard type of fight. You know what I mean? We got to branch out and start looking at this thing as a broader picture in the spectrum of everything that we're talking about and dealing with together. And look, if we don't get along with this group of people or that group of people, look, you got to put that off to the side. You got to come together and have the common goal as to what is the most important common goal we are all fighting for. What is the most strongest belief that means something to you, your family, and your community that you can see reflects to the rest of the people around the world. And that's what we have to do. And if everybody can put that paradigm shift thinking, a way of thinking, into their mindset and use it through their lips and their energy, I think we can use everything that we have, even the negative, to the benefit of something positive that we can all win and fight and win in the end. I think we can, because everything else will shape out and formulate together to work itself out, basically. You know, I don't think I could have said that any other different way to try to bring my message across here, and that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, I don't get along with certain people and this type of people, but I don't judge everyone in one lump group and say they're all got to be condemned. I believe that there's a bigger picture of evil out there that's overshadowing the people's minds, hearts, and their families today. We could see it happening right before our very eyes. And look, man, we got the greatest tool right now available. Look, we're podcasting live worldwide right now, and this is going to be downloaded and then replayed, or for anyone who wants availability to it, for free, basically. And why not take advantage of that before they shut us down, Sarge or anybody else out there? Take advantage. And people call me a troll. You're trolling around now, your podcast. Because you know what? I feel very compelled and strong about the way I believe, and I'm concerned about humanity itself. And whether or not people agree with me or they don't like me or they hate me or whatever they might be, being is what I just said prior to what I'm saying now. I'm trying to do what is best, and I feel in my conscience is the best thing. And look, and ideas clash. And look, one side's going to win and one side's going to lose when it's all said and done. I would like to see my side win, and we all, nobody wants to say I'd rather see you win, you know, or my enemy win, right? So what side are we going to align ourselves with? Where are you going to be? I'm not sitting on the fence, and everyone knows that. I think I should get the respect for that, at least, for the people out there that are sending me emails right now, slandering me and calling me scumbag and this and that, and their usual death threats that never materialize. You know, so just, you know, use your brain or stop talking out your ass and start becoming a product of your environment and stop being a product of your environment and start using your energy to something different, and you'll feel a lot better tomorrow morning when you wake up or whatever the hell you wake up or whatever it may be. You know, so use it, man. Use what the tools we have at our hands right now we can use. You know what I mean, Sarge? That's all I'm trying to say to people out there.
Yeah, I know what you mean, man. We had to convince people of how murderous these philosophies they're advocating are. I mean, they're just completely murderous because they're getting, you know, whether it's Marxism or left, whatever type of leftism you're talking about a philosophy that's totally against human nature itself. That's why it never works. That's why you can't ever point out a completely socialist or communist country that's ever worked to provide its people with both military security and prosperity at the same time, because everything they do is contrary to human nature. It's just at odds with human nature.
Exactly.
And they're trying to convince these people today, and more people, especially young people, are being convinced that socialism / Marxism is a good idea, you know, and makes sense. We've got to tell them why it doesn't. Why it goes against the very thing that makes us human.
Yeah, man. I mean, listen, I was sitting there, I had to mow yards today, you know, and then I had an irrigation leak at one of my customers' houses, and the water's all over the place and whatnot, you know, and I'm trying to fix it. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, man, I wish I had some reliable work help, you know, and people to work for me. And I was thinking about the conversation I had last night. I reflect back. I'm always thinking, you know. And it's just like I'm like trying to rationalize a lot of what people say that I interact with on this podcast show or privately on the phone or whatnot. And I play it back in my head, and I'm like, you know, trying to figure out the answers. And no time ever in my life have I ever found myself in a situation to where I am totally baffled at the lack of understanding or will to fight the right fight. You know what I mean? I just don't get it. I just don't understand it. There's no common sense anymore, whether you agree or disagree. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, we've analyzed this thing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you know, well, like I said, we got a real task in front of us, man. All of the high ground of media and academia and the culture and social networking and everything is arrayed against us, right? Everything. And if you're conservative, you believe in the Constitution, you believe in the principles of the Declaration, all of it is arrayed against you right now, all of it.
Yeah.
And we've got an uphill battle to fight, man. I mean, it's
rough. It's rough.
It's dire,
you know,
to say the least.
And all the people that we're still going to meet in the future, you know, like a lot of individuals, you know, I was speaking to a individual last night, and, you know, it's like, you know, this meeting that's coming up out there in Texas and whatnot. You know, look, I don't want to come and create division amongst the people or start anything that's going to create conflict, because that's not what I'm about. But you know what? why, I mean, if I just don't, because a couple of people have actually contacted me privately also, and were like, hey, you know, we want to do this or whatever. You know, I don't want to say too much without exposing names, because there are some people listening right now. I got about four of them that are listening right now that are personal close friends of mine, and they're from the, Navy, and, you know, they got my back no matter what. And, you know, they just, you know, they've been kind of, you know, they listen to this podcast all the time. They very seldom call in. I mean, you know, so just, it's like, we're not, I don't want to send off the wrong image or impression of, upon other people that I'm looking for trouble. You know, I'm doing this for a reason. And it's not, and the reasons that some people get or I guess you could say the condescending, negative, what have you, attitude towards me or the things I say, they know deep down inside it's all bullshit, you know, what they're trying to do. And so I ask myself this. I say, well, what's your goal then? You know, I mean, what is your goal by doing or contacting or calling into my show or other shows? You know, because those are the trolls. I'm not a troll. I've been doing this a little while now. And like you said, Sarge, from your impressions of what our conversations and whatnot, you give your honest opinion on what you think of what I say and what I believe. And, you know, I'm not saying it because I agree with you or you agree with me, but you're pretty much spot on. That's how I feel, and this is how I operate in life. And what have you, whatever happened 35 years ago, 40 years ago, before, whatever happened, you know, this is who I am as an individual, and I'm concerned about my family, my friends, and people that are not even my friends. I don't want to see nobody out there suffer. You know, I'm here to help, you know, and I want to help everyone out there I possibly can, and that's the object and goal of this, you know.
Well, you
with
know
all
what, man,
I think
we ought to look at what we really all need to be concerned about right now, because right now, like you point out, there are some immediate things that are a dire threat to us all, and we all need to coalesce around them, because I think most of us have a vision of this country that we'd like to preserve to some degree or other, and all of us can agree on that. And did you hear the latest thing coming out of Georgia about the new findings? And the Gateway Pundit is reporting on it. They're reporting that there was coordination and collusion between Pennsylvania and Georgia in a 2020 election steal. That they found.
I don't know. I'm ignorant of that. I don't know nothing about that, Sarge. If you want to educate me real quick.
But you go on the Gateway Pundit, you'll see it. They show on a graph the way the vote count spike at the same times and in almost exactly the same patterns. And they give the times and the dates at which it occurs. If you graph it out, you look at how amazingly exact these two graphical representations are, as though they were created by algorithms.
Algorithms, yeah.
I mean, it's really funny what they're coming up with about this election.
Yeah. I wouldn't doubt that for a second, Sarge. I would not doubt that for a second. What you're saying is true, 100% accurate. And the thing of it is, though, but what can we do to change this? What can we do? You know, what can we do? What can we do to fight together to try to make a difference together, somehow, some way? You know?
Yeah, you know. Well, what we ought to do is say that what is near and dear to us about this country and what we want to preserve about it, hey, let's get together and decide what we can do together to keep it that way. Because believe me, these people right now that have come to power, they want to fundamentally transform everything about it. I mean everything. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything they're doing is geared to do exactly that. Everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never seen such a concerted attack on every single major institution, cultural and otherwise, in the political, cultural, educational. I've never seen such concerted attacks in my life. I mean, it's everywhere. It's like a multi-pronged attack. It's like a wide front blitzkrieg on everything.
Wow. Yeah.
You try to stamp down one thing and harping on something else.
Yeah.
Of course, everything's racist. And I'm really sick of them using black people as stalking horses to institute Marxism. That is what irritates me more than anything else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I agree with that. I mean, I know we're getting in deep here, a little depth here of the conversation, the scope of the conversation, but, you know, not all of us have the perfect words to say, and sometimes we make mistakes in the things we say, but deep down inside, we know generally, I know where you stand, Sarge, and many of the other callers, whether we disagree or not, you know, we know where each other's one another stands. And by all means, I don't wish any ill will towards their families, children, and whatnot, like the harm I get wished many, many times over throughout the weeks and months and years doing this and standing up for what I believe to be absolutely true from the bottom of my heart. And, you know, look, we can never, ever say it all and wind it down and say, hey, this is the way it is, and this is what I believe, and this is how it's going to go. None of us can really do that, you know. But at the same time, we can work together somehow, some way, to better our, you know, elements of our environment together. We can. We can, man. We have the tools here at our disposal. We can do it, man. You know, just try. Try. That's all I say. And if you don't like it or like what you see after you try, you're free to move on. You know? I mean, I just don't know how else to say it.
Oh, you know, I think the problem with a lot of folks, particularly when you run into them on the internet and blog talk radio, they love to get in these little personal beefs and these little dumbass, little back and forth, silly insults that are utterly meaningless in the overall scheme of things. And, you know, and most of them are talking about, you know, things they cannot possibly know about and attributing to you. You know, like the woman accused of being an operative. Now, what the hell, what does she know about me to make such a conclusion? And what is she, a mind reader or something or what? She can read minds through the internet? Man, I haven't said anything that could possibly lead her to conclude I'm an operative. Fool. You stop to think of the mind-numbingly asinine and silly things some people say, you got to wonder how their minds even function. And what kind of reasoning processes do they employ? You're an operative because, you know, you got an opinion?
Yeah.
And it's crazy. But, hey, it's the times we're living through today.
Yeah, understanding the time. That's the title of the show. I guess I bought it. I gotta own it, right? You know, I mean, I could have called it, you know, hey, football morning on Friday night. You know, there was many things, you know, whatever, but that wouldn't have got us nowhere, and it wouldn't have achieved anything. Because I'm sure throughout the years I've woken some people up, and I've befriended a lot of good people too. You know, so I really have. You know, I'm happy to say that. You know, a lot of people have come into my life because of doing this, and for a good reason. You know, I mean, there's a frustration out there, but I don't know how it would help. I don't know. I'm just rambling on. But anyway, 657-383-0616. Press number one, man. 657-383-0616. And you can say whatever you want tonight. The floor is yours. We still got a little bit of time here. You want to take advantage of the platform? I'm here. The phone is there. Call in. Press one, you know, and you know, you'll be live on the show here. I'm reading the chat room, that's why I'm sputtering here for time being here. I see a couple of usual numbers there. I just don't want to, you know, bring them on because I don't want to, you know, I just don't want to do it. Let's see here. What's this person saying? We go to the chat room here. Holla at Chia Bo Euro, whatever that means. I don't know. Oh, you're having it out with this guy. Okay. All right. I see what's going on here. All right. Sarge, you are the
He forced it. He's bought it on himself. I'm about to unload on this motherfucker right now. I'm telling you. I'm about to bomb this motherfucker back to the Stone Age. I've had it with him. I tried to be nice. It didn't work. Can't work with a fool.
I hear you.
You just have to put the fool in his place. I'm about to put him there right now.
Okay. Well, if there are the listeners out there that are listening internationally and in other countries or even in America that don't know any better, we have a chat room here on Blog Talk Radio, and you have to log on and become a user, and you can see people chatting with each other and or threatening each other whenever they've
I guess you could say, whatever materializes out of the conversations. But if you have the guts or feel compelled to check it out, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/Joseph Gibson and check out the chat room and you know, have a conversation. Or you can call in 657-383-0616 and press number 1 on your keypad or of your phone and whatnot. Now we'll bring you on live. Understanding the times in which you live today. Sarge, I guess you're typing with this individual. Anyone take advantage of the podcast here, please? We got 22 minutes left. I don't know what shows on your clock. And I'll give you a chance to speak, or if you need someone to reach out or whatever, or you got something, a story you want to share, then this is your time to do it. Sarge, while you do that, I know my voice kind of faded out there a couple times. I'm going to take a 3-minute break and then start giving final thoughts to the podcast show. Like I said, we're here for you. I know it's late, man. It was, you know, sprung this upon you, some of my supporters here. I apologize for that. But sometimes, you know, you got to go with the flow. The final countdown. It's coming. It's supposed to be coming. Audio's messed up with Blog Talk Radio. I'm going to make a complaint now.
Trump supporters are, right? Why we've been so quiet? Where all the Trumpies at, right? That's what I've been hearing. We've been here the whole time. We don't need a safe space. We don't burn down our cities. We don't riot when things don't go our way. And if we lose a fair one, then we accept defeat with humility. But when you try to rob from us...
There was a lawyer once, his name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of, you've seen it, it's in most hymnals throughout our churches, it's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game, we stand in our church services, and we sing the words of that song, and they float over our...
Plant the seed in our home, and boys, let it grow, we're all in free, feed it with our devotion.
All right, everybody, Joseph Gibson Podcasting here, understanding the times in which we live today. All right, back to the phone boards here. I see a couple here that put their hands up, so we're going to go ahead and bring them on here. All right, area code 863, please.
Hey, Joe Bertolucci, how you doing?
Hey, Bert, how you doing, man? Hope you're doing well.
All right. Yeah, I just wanted to try to put a little clarification out there. I've been listening on the live link. I didn't catch all of it, but I caught a lot of what you and Sarge were talking about. I think, you know, you guys have to understand from the NSM's perspective, a lot of people look at me as a dictator, but we don't run the organization that way. This isn't a dictatorship. This is more of a democracy, as I explained. Now, this is we're America. So we may embrace National Socialism, but we still are born here in America. It makes no difference that I've got Italian heritage or everybody else has German heritage. Whenever there's something that I'm not sure of in the organization or a decision that I'm not 100% sure of that could have consequences, I go to command staff with everything. You know that. So I
okay.
So we're clear on that. Second is whenever the NSM, they're very skeptical of people. They were like this with me. In the very beginning, when this whole Scoop and Stern thing went down, it took a lot of time and a lot of hard work to get them to treat me with the respect that I'm treated with currently. So, you know, I just want to put clarification on that. I think a lot of what the frustration is with you, more so you, and partly with Sarge, is that they feel like you were kind of ranting about your past, which I wish you hadn't have done. Because that put me in a precarious position. And whether it was true or not, if you had just left it well enough alone, I doubt anything would have been said about it. If it had, it came up, it could have been addressed. Now, with Sarge and his situation, I don't know who the female was to who he was talking to. She's not a member of the organization. I don't know who she is. I've only heard her on the podcast one other time. I think, Lieutenant Colonel Schlier actually cornered her one time and asked her if she was ever going to join us. And I think she said because of her job or something, she couldn't. And that's the most I could tell you about her. It's not anybody I've ever spoken to personally. I don't think anybody else has other than what you guys heard yourselves on the podcast. But I think a lot of the frustration with both of you, at least from the NSM's perspective, and this is what the pulse that I'm getting is they're not seeing either one of you do anything. That's the problem. I mean, yeah, we're doing the podcast. You were on our platform. You're on your platform. Sarge is on both of them. But that's all we're doing. And being an NSM member, you know, more so, obviously, we're a white civil rights organization. So, I mean, you know, Sarge could come out there and say things, but obviously he's not white. And Joe, I think they frustrated with you partly because you didn't show up in Phoenix. And I know your situation. I know your story with it. But I'm just telling you what they're saying. And I think they were kind of 50-50 at that point. And when, for whatever reason, you didn't make it out to Phoenix, I think that's where a lot of the skepticism came in from. So just to shine a little light on that for you guys, as far as Texas goes, I'm a firm believer personally, and this is just me speaking. I speak for nobody else but me. I'm a firm believer in second chances, but that's just me. Don't let me speak for everybody out there because I cannot. And this is not an NSM event. that is being hosted out there. This is probably going to be a massive NSM turnout in Texas, I'm guessing, from the figures I'm hearing somewhere. Take a shot out there, somewhere between 30 and 40, possibly 50 members out there, which is probably going to dwarf every other group that's out there. I don't know what all they've got. I mean, we've basically been thing and telling everybody to go to hell, where, you know, lead follower, get the fuck out of the way, has been our attitude about pretty much everything. And there's possibility even after this event, being it's being billed a white unity event, it may still go that way. It may just be like, you know, well, we don't like your swastikas and the usual garbage we're used to hearing, and we're going to be like, okay, well, we've got the majority here and we've got the media, so we're going to do what we're going to do regardless. If anybody, nobody likes it, they can piss off. Now, Sarge, I've heard your frustration before. I'll just make this one point, and I'll hand it back to Joe. I've heard your frustration before about black people being out there and not standing up for what, or standing up for what's right, rather, and not getting the media. I have to disagree with you on that, because I am constantly out there standing up for what the Jewish media hates. They hate me to no end, and it isn't just the media either. And Google my name and see what you get. If not my arrest picture, even look before that. I mean, you'll see pictures of us in Detroit. I mean, so it's out there. So to say that people of color can't get the publicity, no, I'm not going to subscribe to that. It can be done. It's just not getting done.
Well, they don't get as much as they should. And I'll tell you, I just want you to know that whenever I call in to the NSM, I have never been badly treated by any of the hosts. I have no complaints, however, whatsoever about, the way I'm treated when I call in. I get a fair hang. I get to say what I got to say. And everything's cool. Because I'm looking for clarity.
Be.
I don't need agreement. And as far as I can tell, I'm treated cordially by the host. And that is certainly at least civilly. And that is more than good enough for me.
Yeah, no, that's how it should be. I mean, unless you're calling up being an asshole. I mean,
I really want to test ideas, concepts, and opinions. I really do.
Yeah.
And everybody's got them.
Like
look, we're not going to magically make anybody in this country disappear. And I think we all owe it to each other to at least have an understanding of what everybody else is thinking, even if you don't agree with it.
Yeah, I feel like their patience is getting a little thin with the talking stuff, because you guys have to understand, your podcasting and Sarge and Joe and everything you guys are doing, that may be, I don't know what percentage, I'd venture to say maybe 100% of your activism at this point, but that's only like 35% of ours. I mean, we're out in the streets.
Sorry.
I mean, you guys see everything that we do.
Yeah, Bert. Bert, I'm running for political office, for goodness sake. How much more can I get involved? You know,
I haven't seen anything about it though, Joe. Unless you know, except
the
stuff that you talked about.
Hang on, Sarge. Let me finish this point, please. Hang on, go ahead, Bert. I'm sorry.
No, I was just saying. I mean, yeah, we know what you've said about it, but we haven't seen it. I'm not trying to discount it or discredit it. I believe you 100%. It's just not. It's not making the BuzzFeed. I guess is my point.
Yeah. Well, I don't expect the North Carolina House of Representatives candidate to, and I don't want to make the BuzzFeed saying, calling me this and that and this and that and this and that, if you know what I mean. You know,
right,
so.
I'm following
but,
you. It's not making the media that we're making going through Detroit, I guess is my point.
Yeah, I got you. And for me as one man to do that, to make that type of impression on the media nationally, you know, I don't think that would be wise anyway. You know, I don't think it would be. I think it would be more or less to work.
I'd have to disagree with you there, Joe. If you want to get something you've never had, you've got to do something you've never done. That's my opinion.
Okay. All right. What I mean as far as the publicity goes, I don't, because you know how the media, you say it yourself. They write the narrative. They slander you, tear you apart. I mean, is that what you really, is that what people want to see happen to me if I'm trying to fight for a cause?
Sure. Look at Donald Trump. I mean, you guys talk about him all the time. He became president of the United States based on nothing but negative Jewish publicity.
Yeah, but he had quite a foundation, Bert. He had quite a foundation, and I don't have that foundation.
He had a lot of
nowhere
money.
Even near.
I mean, you're not running for president of the United States either, though. You said, you're running for a local position in your state. You might one day, though.
Yeah, you never know.
He also got the sales of a win that was almost perfect for him to come into office. He literally came into office on the verge of a perfect storm and against the perfect candidate who everybody realized was utterly unsuited for the job.
Well, my thing is, I don't want to turn this into a Trump because we're analyzing the podcast here, which is very important. And I know it's important and dear to Bert because he puts a lot of hard work into it. You know, and I know it is probably to a lot of the members over there also. And I understand that, and I could respect that. I think the disagreement really comes from where I think everything was really not too bad, even to the point I'll reach out on a limb here, which I know we don't get along, Jay and I. But as far as everyone else, except one big, which was Ron, you know. So, I mean, I think that he pushed it over an edge that he really shouldn't have done. You know, that's in my opinion. I mean, and a lot of your supporters, too, Bert, actually did contact me privately and kind of disagreed with the way he handled that. Now, I'm not trying to light a fun on the fire under something. I'm just trying to put the facts out there from what I was told, you know, through individuals that I'm not going to name, but supporters that you know I know that actually don't even call into the podcast show, but they listen and they show financial support.
Well, that
and
was the
whatnot.
Whole reason. Yeah, that was the whole reason why I wanted to bring you in the first place before any of these people even knew your name, was because you were at a little different end of the spectrum. It's just like Harry Hughes and how he does his show. It's very different than how I do my show or the others. I mean, Harry's a lot more laid back. You know, he reads controversial stories, but his demeanor is a lot more laid back. And you have a different category. You know, you fall into a different category, and Ron is obviously in a different category, and everybody.
I think he falls into a dangerous category. I think he falls into a dangerous category with some of the things.
Well, there was a time where they were saying that about me too. They thought I was crazy in the white nationalist movement. Now I'm kind of subtle, aren't I? I haven't changed a thing. I haven't changed a damn thing. I am still stalking the same shit as I was talking 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
Well, look, I work very hard in politics in Chicago. I was involved in Alan Key's senatorial run against Barack Obama. I was involved with Jim Oberweis's campaign for governor, who was actively anti-illegal immigration. I was active in several other campaigns. I worked with people who tried to get in the court. The constitutional issue of Obama not being a natural-born citizen. I've done quite a bit of activism, and I got to admit, I become kind of disillusioned because almost everything I've been involved in has been a failure, even though I didn't lead it. I mean, but I was very active in it. But I am working behind the scenes on some things that I don't want to say here on the internet exactly what they are, but they do have to do with preparation for the future.
Yeah, and we've got some people that are doing that too. I respect that. To me, for the average American, if you're talking about prepping, I think it's good if it's within their means to do it financially. I think a lot of people find it difficult and are probably living from paycheck to paycheck, so I don't think that's realistic for some people. Others, it may be. If you can afford to do it, do it. My concern is not doing all the prepping as much as it is you're not going to be able to fire up enough hot lead out your front door if Tifa and all these communists come in. I'm man enough to admit that I couldn't do it, and I own a lot of guns and a lot of ammunition. You know,
I don't want you to misunderstand the type of preparation I'm talking about. I'm talking about organizational preparation.
Okay.
Organizational.
I thought you meant doomsday prepping.
No, I don't mean just for me as an individual, for my individual family. I mean for organizations. Because, I mean, if you heard Joe Biden the other day, you'll understand why we need to.
On
the west wing, in the east wing of the White House, you understand why we need to start organizing.
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as the government goes, in my opinion, I think they're just, Biden's going to do his thing for his four-year term, or whether it be 4 or 8 years. He does 2 terms, and then another Republican's just going to come in, and they're going to go a little further to the right, and then another Democrat's going to come in, they'll go a little further to the left, and it's like back and forth. It's like a damn seesaw with this stuff. What concerns me is that no matter which one you put in there, whether they do one or two terms, it seems like the whole thing is gradually shifting to Marxist socialism. I think you guys would agree with that. Even
I think it's a little bit more than gradual. That's it. I think it's a little bit more. Maybe it's not full bore, but I think it's a little more than gradual this time. This has a different
character. Let me just say this, guys, if you don't mind. You know, I think we have something here as far as a media that we were talking about, a media platform here that has the edge here, that has the opportunity without being sabotaged to grow where we can reach people. And I think that's what I originally told you, Bert, from day one, didn't I? You know, and I said, we're going to do something where it can go one way or the other, but, you know, and have something special here in the end. But it's going to take a lot of work and a lot of dancing on the tightrope, you know what I mean, where it doesn't get pushed over the edge and then it goes into a ball of flames. And that's happened, you know that.
We're just walking the line right now. That's all we're doing is walking the line right now. We're trying to walk a straight and narrow as far as Blog Talk terms go. I have a feeling that this whole thing with Blog Talk eventually is going to go the way that VK over in Russia went. The Jews are going to come in, they're going to buy it up, and
you
people
that.
Like
yep, you
and us are not going to be allowed to say what we're saying currently anymore. They're going after Republicans, and Republicans are just now being woken up to the fact that this is happening. Like, hello, we were telling you this 20 years ago, and you said because we were Nazis, that, you know, tough shit. And now it's happening to them, and now they don't know what to do. Well, we're 20 years ahead of them on this stuff, and that's
and guys,
why our website
guys,
is still up.
Yeah, and guys, we're going to go into let's go to a couple minutes of overtime here. So if anybody wants to queue in here, you need to do it because they won't let you in here in about 3 minutes. So 657-383-0616. But, Bert, I agree with you one wholeheartedly there. But my one thing I did want to bring up, though, is that, look, I show up down there at this meeting. If something does happen and it's a powder keg, I'm coming with, you know, probably, what, 6-7 guys that are, you know, this and that, whatnot, and I don't want to divide anybody. That's what I'm afraid of. But then if I don't come, you know, it's going to be I'm dirt.
So
again,
if you want to show up at that meeting, I'll make sure you get on and off the property just fine. So don't worry about it. How's that?
And then thank you very much. I respect that. I know you're a man of your word. I'm not worried about that. I just don't want to take away from what's trying to be accomplished. Do you see what I'm saying
it's
now?
It's a white unity conference there, so nobody's got really anything to say about it. So just because the NSM's going there or command staff or whatever, we really don't have anything to say about it. There's probably
–
I can already tell you, as men, we do. I can tell you right now, Billy Roper going there. You've heard what I've said about Billy Roper. I mean, he and I are at bitter loggerheads. And if he's going to this event, I just say, you know, hold my beer and watch this shit.
You know what I think? We need to do what the Jews do. We need to capitalize on it. Let's have a live event. You know? Right?
Well, I think you know what I'm talking about.
It does seem like more and more white people are waking up to the dangers we all face from these people. I mean, I was really encouraged by what I'm seeing, like, in Loudoun County, Virginia, and elsewhere. I mean, these parents are getting up in their faces, and they're pissed as hell. And it's growing all across the country.
Yeah. And that's a good thing, though.
It is. I mean, they've got to stop this stuff. And it's right. People have got to see that Americans of all stripes, and particularly white people, they're under the most threat. They're under the most attack I've ever seen white people in. I've never seen anything like this. I mean, they're starting to wake up and say, hey, we cannot allow this to continue. They are literally trying to take our children away from us mentally. They're going to have snitching on them like block commissars in the Soviet Union or something.
Yeah, we've been over that a million times, but I agree with you. Before I do shut us down, though, any final thoughts here? I'll start with you first, Bert, because you called in here at the latter half. Just say whatever you want to say. I mean, the floor is yours here for a couple minutes or however long you need. You know, I always give you that opportunity because I have a mutual respect and understanding. I consider you a friend, actually, and I look forward to meeting you.